Today we're going to do storytelling in its many colors of love, mainly as a way of looking at and expressing the feelings that come through stories. And since we all know love is anger, love is fear, love is sadness, and love is great joy. And those are the four feelings which we are going to express today in our warm-ups. And then we're going to tell some stories. Stories about times when we experienced some face of love. I have to begin with this because this is a thought that I think will be running through everything we're doing. Though we have not seen God, when we love each other, God lives in us. When I was driving my three-year-old to Sunday school, I think, she said, "Mommy, who do you love more, God or me?" And of course I recalled, you know, have no other gods before me, love God above all else, you know, I was very uncomfortable replying, "I love God more than you," because actually it wasn't really true. And so I said, I think I love you both, or something like that. And I wasn't satisfied with that answer either. And then I asked my father what he would have said. And he said, "Well, I would hope that you would say that you love God when you love her." And of course, it makes a world of sense. And that's what this verse from 1 John is telling us. Though we have not seen God, when we love each other, God lives in us. Well, that's a really nice, pious thought if you look at it in terms of God, loving God. But what happens when you don't get to love the person that you love? Then don't you know God's love anymore? What goes on? My beginning to understand that question is part of the story of my birth. I was born in the Philippine Islands in 1941, the end of 1941, on December 1st. And on December 7th, Pearl Harbor. And December 8th, my godfather, Uncle Herb, was walking down the street in Baguio, where we were living up in the mountains, and he met my sponsor, Judy Hyland, who wrote this book about our experiences called In the Shadow of the Rising Sun. Now, Judy was cramming for a test, a Chinese test, and her head was full of Chinese proverbs, and Uncle Herb was always the gadfly and the interrupter of everybody's programs. And he said, "Have you heard that Pearl Harbor was bombed?" No sooner had he said this than they saw silver planes flying overhead. Everyone started cheering and waving, thinking it was the Americans, but it was the Japanese. And for the next 3 weeks, we were under the bombs of the Japanese. So for the first 3 weeks of my life, I lived with my mother and father in our little cottage, held by my mother under the kitchen table. They decided it was a safer place for me than the basement of the school, which was the only building in town that had a basement. And everybody was jammed in there, so the toilets were overflowing and it was noisy and there wasn't any food, and it just didn't seem like a good place to bring a newborn. So they kept me under the kitchen table. And that's why I did not go to prison camp in a truck along with my parents, friends, and the rest of the Americans who did get picked up on the 27th of December to be brought to the camp, John Hay, which had been converted into a prison camp. Instead, I was taken in a black limousine. And the officer who arrived was able to speak English. So my father asked him if we could bring some supplies in, and he said yes. So my dad brought formula and diapers for me. We got into the thing. I think my mother brought her beautiful lace, a wedding dress with her, and a few other precious things to her. And when we arrived at the prison camp, we got out, and our stuff did not. We never saw it again. The first 3 years of my life were full of paradoxes like this. I had dysentery. My mother had dysentery. My father had ulcers. He almost died. He had to have blood transfusion. There was nothing to do in prison camp, absolutely nothing. So the adults spent a good portion of the first month telling stories to the kids in the tennis court, and then they were divided, and the men were separated from the women, and a barbed wire fence was run down where the tennis net had been. And my first memory is my mother holding me and talking to my dad on Friday afternoon, which was the time when the men and the women were allowed to speak to each other, and handing me over the net to my father, who put me on his shoulders and began walking across the court toward the barracks to show me where he lived. I felt like a small tree. He was tall and I was small, and he was holding me up there. And as we walked, some friend of his yelled, "Watch out, Carol, he's got his gun on you." And sure enough, the Japanese guard did have his gun on us, because they had said that if any man or woman touched each other, they could be shot. My father kept on walking, and we did get to the barracks. So my first lessons of love were lessons of risk. And they were also lessons of the willingness to surrender to an uncertainty about what is going to happen next. And I'd like to suggest that today, as we think about the stories of love, that the way we have learned love in our lives and the lessons we've learned about love in our lives and tell our stories, that we think about the surrender to uncertainty and the willingness to take the risk, that falling in love provides for us, as we can all recall, those of us who have fallen in love. But those of us who have attached to a passion of any sort can recall that sense of adventure and the wonder of being focused on the unknown. We don't know what's going to happen. That is part of love. So taking risks bring us to the beginnings. And after all, as in my first 3 years, one life ended and another began. And that life, people will say to me, "Oh, that's too bad. You were born in a prison camp. That's really too bad." And I certainly, this is not in praise of prison camps, but I was so blessed by having such an enormous community of people who cared for me. I was held, I was prayed for, I was appreciated by circles of people. People who were in prison camp with me, people who knew my grandparents in the United States, and people who lived before I was born, who prayed for all of us who were to follow after. So, I am blessed by my beginnings and the first lessons of love in my life. Now, to get us rolling here, I have a pencil. I guess I'm going to use a, I'll use a checkbook. That'll be just as good. We're going to pass this checkbook around the circle, and I'd like everybody, can we push our chairs back so that we're all in the same circle? Because when we have double circles, then it's harder to make eye contact. Now, I've heard quite a bit of talk while I've been at Holden about how important it is for us to speak with feeling and acknowledge feelings and the way we communicate. Well, that's all well and good to say this, but frankly, if we've been brought up to maybe smile, and that's about it, and please don't raise your voice or cry, then it's pretty hard to show feelings, because those are some of the ways we do. That's part of the language of feelings. So I am going to suggest that we exchange something very simple, a checkbook. And this is how we're going to do it. We're going to pass it around the circle, and we're going to practice giving and taking without any feeling at all. This is simply an exchange of a checkbook. And these are the words. This is a checkbook. You take it, you give it back to me. And you say, this is a what?
This is a what?
This is a checkbook. Go ahead.
This is a checkbook.
This is the what?
No, take it. Take it. And then pass it back to her. This is a what?
This is a what?
And then she gives it. This is a
checkbook. All right, good. Pass it to...
This is a checkbook.
This is a what?
This is a checkbook.
This is a checkbook. This is a what? This is a checkbook.
Good. You're really taking it and giving it back and forth. That's the first part. I think we're going to divide into two sections because I want to get around faster, and then we'll have more time to tell the stories with this added. The next part is going to be passing it with feelings. Now, when feelings enter, that's when the coding, the secret codes become important. Because this is where you find out that people don't always say what they mean. This is a checkbook.
This is a what?
This is a checkbook! All right. Now, in addition to that, they're contagious. So, you catch a feeling from someone else. You take it. Give it to her.
This is a checkbook.
This is a what?
It's a checkbook.
All right, let it roll. Really let her know you're mad. Okay. Now, see? For some of us, and this is, feelings are conditioned along sex lines. Anger is a lot harder for women to express, whereas sadness or fear is a lot more difficult for men. Go ahead.
Anger?
Mm-hmm.
This is a checkbook.
This is a what?
This is a checkbook.
Good.
This is a checkbook. This is a what? This is a checkbook. This is a checkbook.
It's a what?
It's a checkbook.
Good. Now, we're going to keep it going around. I think we'll just stay together because this is going a little faster than talking. All right. Now I'm going to suggest a different feeling. Good. That's so fearful I can hardly hear you. All right. Now, let's have you show joy. Great pride. This checkbook has a check for several thousand dollars, which is going to allow both of you to take a trip to Hawaii.
Oh, this is a checkbook. This is a checkbook.
What?
A checkbook. This is a checkbook.
What?
A checkbook.
This is a checkbook.
Oh, this is a what?
This is a checkbook.
Really? Now, let's raise the ante here. This isn't just a couple thousand dollars. This is the lottery. You've won the $2 million lottery.
checkbook.
A what?
It's a checkbook. This is a checkbook.
Take it, take it. Be sure you take it.
A checkbook.
Yeah. All right, good. All right.
A checkbook.
What?
A checkbook.
All right, stop, stop. Just a sec. We're going to go to a different feeling. You just lost every penny you've saved for the last 10 years. And furthermore, it's not just bankruptcy, it's the death of a very dear and faithful dog.
And the lottery.
And the lottery, both at the same time. This is a very painful loss. You are very sad. All right, you're angry. You're very angry and irritated.
This is a checkbook.
The what?
The checkbook.
Now, you can choose to carry that anger on or change the feeling to give it to him.
This is the checkbook.
This is a what?
It's a checkbook. Checkbook.
A checkbook.
This is what?
A checkbook.
This is a checkbook.
What's the feeling? Give it to me again.
This is a checkbook. This is a what? This is a checkbook.
Okay. Well, good. That's just a way to find that there are lots of colors of feeling that come into anything that we want to say or do, but especially in stories. There's all kinds of ways that you can communicate an idea. It doesn't have to be literally in the words, and lots of times it's more interesting if it isn't. So, okay, now we've got, it's 20 after 4, and I'm going to give you 6 minutes, and I'm going to give you a partner, and you're going to tell a 3-minute story to your partner, and your partner's going to listen very carefully and then tell you one. Then you're going to tell each other stories to us. Got it? You don't want to do that, do you? You want to tell your own story, don't you?
No.
Okay. And are there any questions before we start?
Subject matter.
Subject matter, any story you want to tell. It'll all fit this. This is a theme that it'll will
that
fit
story
anything.
Of, love or God's love for you or your
no,
love for
no,
somebody
no,
else.
No, 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 no. Not God's
any
love.
Any kind of a story you want.
Something specific. Something that's really happened to you.
That it's got to be something.
It'll be about God's love. No matter what you tell, it'll have that in it. Okay. So that's that. You don't have to worry about that part. We're just being specific here. We want it to be just about something that's happened to you or someone you know that you want to share with us. Some incident in your life or someone else's life or in a story you've read or heard.
We will.
Okay. Which one of you is going to tell?
I told my story first. And so.
Oh, okay, okay, just sit down here then and he'll tell your story.
Okay.
Now. He's going to introduce himself as you.
Oh, gosh.
And speak in the first person. And he puts his hands on her shoulders, which I want each of the tellers to do, because this will give you kinesthetic reassurance.
All right.
That way.
That way for me.
Doesn't it? This testimonial. See, they've been through this before.
This is great.
Hello, my name is Karen. I'm from Ketchikan, Alaska, and I teach in the public schools up there. Last year was third grade. I've taught kindergarten most of the time. Yeah. Next year when I go back, I'll be a first grade teacher. When I go back. I don't remember when this happened to me. Because I'm not sure I was told. But when I was, I forgot. When I was in college, second year, I guess, I went back to my hometown in Libby, Montana, and got a job as a fire lookout. One of those jobs where you go up into the top of the tower. Whoops. Where you go up into the, I can't do it without it, into the top of the tower, and you have a 360 degree view all around. And I thought, gee, I'm going to be alone all summer. Just going to be terrific, and I'll be able to communicate with myself, get a lot of thinking done. And as it turned out, I had visitors almost every day, and rather than being a fire lookout, most of the time, it seems like I was a public relations expert. But it was a good experience. I want to tell you about what happened to me one night when I was up there. And for those of you that have never been to Montana, it gets darker later. And it doesn't get really, really dark until quite late, like 10:30, 11 o'clock. And so one night, it had just gotten dark, and it was really pitch black out. Decided it was time to go to bed, so I crawled into bed, got the covers up nice and close. All of a sudden, heard a car. And I didn't have my car there, because I got in a ride up with some friends who were going to come back and get me at the end of my stint for the week. And so I thought, well, maybe it's some friends coming up to visit. But it is a little late. But maybe it's some friends coming up to visit. I hope. So I looked out the windows and tried to see if I could recognize the vehicle that was down there, and I didn't recognize the car. And soon I heard voices, and I didn't recognize the voices either. And let me tell you, I was a little bit nervous. Especially when the people down below on the ground, the man, started shouting, "Let's go see if there's anybody up there." And there was only one up there that I knew about. So, I thought, what can I do? Well, I knew there was a ground or a floor, a layer, a tier beneath me. It was the only way you could access it was through a trap door, and I knew that was locked. So I felt pretty safe about that. And anyway, these people started coming up, and then pretty soon I heard, "Nah, let's not bother with that. We'll just leave." So they eventually went back, rumbled around down below, and made a lot of noise, and eventually got back into their truck, and off they sped, except they stopped right about the edge of our clearing, and picked up the garbage cans that were there, threw in the back of the truck, and off they went. So the next morning, I had to make this interesting call back to Libby, and I said, "I had some visitors last night, and I'm not sure who they were, but I don't have any garbage cans here today."
Good storyteller.
Thanks.
Hi, my name is Bill, and I'm from Vancouver, Washington. I teach in a middle school now, and my wife's name is Marilyn, and she's here with me. And this story is about getting a job in a similar situation as my friend Karen. And this happened to me right after I was done with my first year of teaching. I was 23 years old. And I just happened to be through an area up in the Olympic National Forest visiting some friends, and they started talking to me about maybe being a park ranger. And they offered me a position where my wife and I would have to hike in 13 miles, but my wife Marilyn didn't really want to do that one. So we took the second choice, which was just to go to the end of the road. And we ended up going in and getting all the things we needed, our supplies, and starting up. And the only thing I didn't have, was my uniform. I just had my badge. And so we went up and introduced ourselves at this spot that we were going to be at. And it wasn't just like a post. There was kind of a resort there, like a large hotel and a swimming area and a restaurant and bar. And so we had our little cabin over. It was some kind of next to this area. And we got all settled in for our first night as park ranger and wife, and we heard the radio come on, you know, park ranger, 5967, all these numbers. And I jumped out of bed and thought, oh no, my first job, what's going on, what's going on? And tried to get my contacts in, and I was wiggling around, trying to really kind of nervous. And the radio said again, we have two drunk people in the bar, would you come and get them out? And so then I thought, oh my gosh, and my wife is going, please don't go, don't do that. You know, you're just a park ranger, you don't have to deal with that kind of stuff. And so I just got my clothes on and my contacts in, and the radio came, back on, and right at that same moment, this car zoomed by, and the radio said, you don't have to come, they just left.
That was good. Really good.
You guys might as well get it over. Come on.
I don't know. Good mind. I know that's right.
Oh, I was in World War II. My name's Chef McClellan, and I'm talking about...
No, what his name? Yeah, that's it.
Dick Kaler.
Okay.
Or close enough. Okay. I was in World War II, and I was going to be transferred into the Fleet Marines, and I was waiting for a guy to come back and take my place so I could go to the Fleet Marines. And I waited and waited and waited, but he didn't come. And then I found out that he was transferred into another part, and so that I had to stay where I was then.
Well, my name is Dick Kaler, and this is Cecil McClellan.
No, you introduce yourself as Seth. My name is Seth.
Myself, period, okay. Yeah. I'm Dick Kaler.
No, you're Seth. You're talking to Seth.
Oh, I'm
now.
Seth?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell his story, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Well, this takes place back in the 1870s. I used to be a gun-toting guy that no one could beat the draw on. I happened to go into this here saloon, and I was going over toward the chair I usually sits in, and there was this captain sitting in that chair, and I asked him, would you please get up out of that chair? That's where I always sit. And he says, we're all friends here, just take another chair. And well, okay, and so I goes and sits down in the other chair, and the first thing you know, a guy comes up behind me and boom! And bullet went right through me and right through the captain too. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay, that's what's about Wild Bill Hickok.
Oh, Wild Bill Hickok. Well, that was a good story. Very exciting.
I love, yeah, come on.
My name is Ruby, and I'm remembering my experiences of traveling with my husband, going to school in various different places in the United States, in California, and Iowa. My husband was in school, and I was putting him through school, and I was getting my PhD, putting husband through. And then along came children, and I was used to working, but then I had family, and I was supposed to be taking care of family, and I was getting real mixed feelings about not being a good mommy and not staying home, and I wanted to do both. And so those were some of the years that I've been thinking about.
Good.
I walked in just as you were doing this, and I'm not even aware that I was supposed to be really listening to what Frances told me.
Oh, no. You'll do fine. What's your name?
I'm Frances, and I'm from Texas.
Ah.
I teach school, and my husband also teaches school, and he has to drive 27, we drive together. And he drives 27 miles, and I think I drive 39 miles. So we have a drive together, which we enjoy. And I, even though I'm not a morning person, yet I came to enjoy that time because we could watch the sun getting up in the morning and see a beautiful river and the mist that falls over the river. And then I would drop him off, and I would continue on the final way going to school and teaching, and I enjoy that.
I'm Janice Wick, and this story is a real story. It came from when I was working with the American Missions, and I was traveling around, and this happened when I was in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And with when I worked with the American Missions, they would find places for me to stay because I would just be in one place for a few weeks or so. And when I went to Fort Wayne, Indiana, they didn't have a place for me. So I stayed in a motel for one night. This was a Saturday night. And then the next, and they said, well, maybe it's Sunday. Maybe we'll find some people in the church that we can connect you with. And so Sunday when I went to church, they said, well, why don't you come to the Ladies' Aid meeting this afternoon, and I think we'll find someone for you there. So I went to this Ladies' Aid meeting, and this lady came up to me and kind of just grabbed me right away and said, you're just the person I need. And she took me in this other room and had me change into this sorority. And I was a model on the stage because they were showing colored women from different countries. And then afterwards, I met the lady that I was supposed to, that maybe had a room for me. And she said, well, yeah, you can stay with me, but I'm going to a family reunion if you would like to come along. And like a fool, I said yes. And this is after I'd been sitting at the meeting, at the Ladies' Aid meeting, bored to tears in my sorority. But I did go to the family reunion with this woman, and then she brought me home to her place, and there she had a room. And when I went into the room, there was the bed that was kind of dirty. It was didn't even have clean sheets on it. But I slept there that night, and then the next morning when I was having breakfast with this woman, she turned to me and said, you know, I really don't want you here. And but I ended up staying, and we ended up becoming good friends.
I'm Margaret, and I'm from Minnesota, but my mother used to be from Arkansas, and so we were going down, my mother and my father and my brother John and I, my sister Judy and I, were going down for a family reunion or to visit some people, and we were leaving early in the morning, and my brother and sister-in-law Bill and Nancy were leaving that evening, and so we started out early in the morning and got a motel in Missouri and stayed there overnight, and the next morning we got up and drove a short distance and found a Sambo's to have breakfast at. And we were sitting there getting ready to order and noticed there was another car from Minnesota out there, and it was so strange because all the other license plates were Arkansas. And come to find out it wasn't my brother and sister-in-law Bill and Nancy, and so all of us got together and had a little family reunion in a restaurant in Missouri.
Good, thank you.
You told your story first.
You can take it back first.
I'm Cheryl, and I'm from Vermont. And 3 years ago, I went to Norway with a group of students, leading a group of students. And we were hiking up a mountain and enjoying the scenery in the mountain and looking down on the fjords. And up the mountain, there was a glacier, and it was obviously a trail that people hiked. And so we were visiting with our guide and asking about the different trails, and we asked him, how difficult trail is this up to the glacier? Say on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate it if 10 was the most difficult? And he said, oh, people in their 70s make that hike, and little kids, 3 years old, make that hike. I'd probably rate that 3. Anybody can make that hike. So I went off with my group, leading the way up to the glacier. And as we went up, it began to look practically straight up as we continued on the trail. And the farther we went, the steeper it got. And before long, the student behind me was literally pushing me up the trail. And I was getting tired, more tired as we went along. And we got up to the top and could look down to a little village just below where we could take a rest. And so we walked down there, and by this time I was literally exhausted, and I didn't know how I was even going to make it that little way to this cabin. And we made it to the cabin, and I was so tired that I couldn't even talk. I just stumbled into the cabin with help, and all I could do was point at my mouth. And they knew that I was hungry, and they fed me. They just spoon-fed me until I regained enough energy that I could talk and then go back on the trail and go on down the trail. And we went down this trail, and I literally didn't want to go down the trail because having looked at it from the bottom up and it just seemed straight up, I knew going down it was just absolute a sheer drop. And it was frightening. And I just took the risk, went down with my group, there to give me courage, and somehow managed by the time that we got to the bottom to sing Go Tell It on the Mountain. I forgot the song. But there was enough energy by the time I finally got down to do some singing.
Well, I'm Dee Dee, and I'm going to tell a story about when I was a little girl with my friend Kathy. And I remember that our family was building a house, and there was lots of dirt around, and that we were playing together in the sand. And I filled Kathy's shoe with sand. And Kathy didn't like that very much, and she said, I'm never going to come back and play with you anymore. But we stayed in the same neighborhood, and as we grew up, we stayed friends, and Kathy and I did play together after.
I'm Dawn, and I'm from Southern Oregon, and the story I'm going to tell is about my son Pete, who is a student at PLU. Pete is a studious son and has always done the things that I expected him to do, but one day he was at school, I guess, and he was looking at the bulletin board and something caught his eye, and it was an advertisement or a notice on the board about sailing. If you were interested in sailing, contact this number. And he decided to contact the number, thinking it was probably something to do with a sailing class or something like that. Well, in actuality, it was an adventure to begin on a 90-foot boat owned by the Sea Scouts that are called out at various times of emergencies to help out the Coast Guard and that sort of thing. And one of the things that he has been able to do, I guess he does this every weekend now, it's just really become a passion with him, is that there was some destruction or some problems with some boats, and he took quite a trip up through the locks of Seattle and into Kirkland and up in that area. And this is so out of the realm of things that he has done that I'm really, really thrilled that my son has ventured out and found this new adventure to take with him.
Sure, interesting to hear yourself talk. My name is Nan. I'm from Puyallup, Washington, where I attend Celebration Lutheran Church. And I recently had an experience with a very close friend of mine that has brought great joy to my life, and it brings joy to others, I think, as I relate this story. This just happened very recently, this summer in fact. A very close friend of mine and her husband have planned for months now, really almost a year, to take a trip down the Oregon coast and all the way south to Southern California and visit Disneyland in their automobile. And they've just planned for a long, long time. And they saved every nickel and dime they could, and they're not wealthy people at all, but they've really planned and saved for this trip. But as months went on, some things developed in their family that hadn't been anticipated, that were somewhat of a financial drain. One of their children was married this summer, and anyone that's experienced that knows that that can be a financial drain. Another child graduated from high school this spring, and that was another financial drain. And as they were planning their trip and getting more and more excited, they began to feel the financial pressure became greater and greater. And finally, they were thinking, maybe we won't be able to make this trip at all. But they said, no, we've been planning for so long, we're going to go. And about a week before the trip, my friend decided that there was only one thing to do, and that was to pray and hope that the prayers would be answered. And she prayed very fervently one evening that if only they could have another $100 for gas, the trip would be a total success. The next morning, when her husband went to work, his boss came to him and said, I know that you've been planning this trip, and I know that it's probably kind of a tight financial squeeze. He says, just to help you out, here's $107.70. After we took out the FICA tax, which we had to do, it's exactly $100 left for you. He called his wife immediately and said, we got our $100, and it really illustrated for me the power of prayer in all of our lives.
It is a different experience when you hear someone else talking, especially when they're trying to talk the way you did, you know, use your own language and everything.
My name is Helen, and I'm from Shelton, Washington, which is near Olympia. And I had three friends that had come to Holden Village and just loved it and said, you just have to come to Holden, Helen. But I just couldn't see any way that I would ever get to come here. And one day I was visiting my mother, who is in a rest home, and my friend came down the hall with some papers in her hand, and she says, here's some applications for you. And it was applications to work here at Holden. And I filled them out and I was accepted. And today's my first day at Holden, and I already just love it.
My name is Mary Jane, and I'm with Southern Oregon, and this is from my strange and wonderful, interesting honeymoon. The first night, my husband took me to the coast for a night. The next day, we went to his parents' home, picked up the nieces and nephews of various people. We went hiking, backpacking, which I had never done in my life. and neither has anybody else but my husband. But we backpack in my 6 miles. And one of my nephews had tennis shoes and were constantly falling apart. And we had to tie them all up with our dish towels. So we finally made it a campsite. Then nobody knew how to do anything but my husband. He would cook. So he did all the safety duty. Then we went fishing and we just had a wonderful time. And we ate hot fish for breakfast and we were so careful. We tied it up in trees so no animals would eat them. But the deer seemed to find them. So we did not have fish one day. But it was a nice experience.
How much variety there is.
My name is Melba and I live in Mount Vernon, Washington now, but I grew up in Missouri. And some two friends and I had been teaching, and one of us in nursing for a few years, and we decided to attend the Lutheran Bible Institute in Minneapolis. While we were there, we saw a sign advertising a ghost town in the state of Washington, and we all decided that sounded kind of intriguing and it would be a fun trip to make. So we took my car and decided we would camp along the way. Well, none of us had ever camped before, but we were willing to try. The first night we headed out to Regina to stay with one of my friend's parents that lived there. The next night we spent in another Canadian town. And then we were out on our own the next night for camping in Glacier National Park. And the two friends slept in the tent. It was just a two-person tent. And I slept in the car that night. And the middle of the night, we heard these little chewing sounds. And I was scared, and my two friends in the car were scared, and we had visions of bears since we were at Glacier National Park. And we survived the night. The noises continued on. So in the morning, we checked with the park ranger, and he said that porcupines like to chew tires, as we could even feel the car moving from these little critters. And the ranger told us it was porcupines that like to chew the tires. So anyway, we were glad to be on our way. And the next night, we spent in Chelan, and then we came up on the old Lady of the Lake boat up to Holden Village and had an interesting experience here as we were, this was in 1961, and we were in the work parties of 40 people that came up, and Gil Berg and some other people were among those in those first years as we came up here to work. And I've been back since and enjoyed it.
My name is Judy, and I live in Seattle, Washington. And I just had a very hectic week with Vacation Bible School. I was really looking forward to coming up to Holden, because it's so nice to be here. It's a change of pace, and the trees and the mountains, you're able to commune with God. It makes you feel a lot closer. And also, I was just planning to curl up and read a good book.
My name is Ray Voller, and I started to remember another time I've been up to Holden, and the first times, hiking over the mountain with my son and another small group while my family was waiting for us up here, the rest of the family. And it was a very special hike because I could see how much it meant to my son. And just the shared experience with him made it a really good time. We had not too many worries starting out. Thought a little bit about what if an accident happened along the way. And I was coming with a few other folks, had organized sort of a little group to come to Holden. And the first time you bring people, you worry a little bit about, well, will they have a good time? Will this be fun for them? But they did, and there were no injuries on the hike. And we enjoyed being out in nature very much, seeing the deer and the marmot and the whistling shrieks you call back to one another across the mountaintop. And hiked in and joined my family here. Had a good stay.
My name is Nancy, and I'm from New Jersey. And the thing that I'd like to tell about would be the time that I was in Taiwan, when my pastor there, who would make a lot of visitation calls, and he was concerned that he wasn't going to get his rice in. So the youth group that I was with, we decided we would go out and put these little tools out into the rice fields.
We stood in
water that was knee deep and harvested the rice for the pastor. And so he did get his rice in, and that was a different experience for me.
It's kind of quitting time, but before we quit, is there somebody here who's just aching to tell you're leaving tomorrow? Yeah, why don't you two come on? One more. This is our encore. And as we go out, I just like you to just think a little bit about what would be easier, to tell your own story or to tell someone else's. Just think about that. Don't answer it.